I want to remind all of you who are here this morning that we also have meetings on Wednesday evening, as most of you know. And I would like to think that the Wednesday evenings are as important as the Sunday morning services, and that the Sunday morning services are as important as the Wednesday evening service. Because we all come here together for but one purpose, and that is to worship God, to be inspired by the truth, and to find ways and means of realizing that truth within ourselves. We can always find time to do everything else, and certainly we should be able to find time and to give our utmost in effort to come and to worship God. Now, I know that you do this in the silence of your soul, at all souls, at all times, that perhaps most of you meditate morning and night, and that we should take this thought of God in every activity. But nevertheless, we should meet together because there is power, the power of God in every single form that walks this earth. And when each one brings that power of God to mix with the power of God in others, then it becomes a powerhouse and everybody benefits from it. We must learn to be selfless, not selfish. Selfish only to the extent that we selfishly want God with all of our hearts and minds and souls in order that we may bring the light to others on the path, all over the world, because certainly it is very badly needed. Now this morning I would like to read to you an article which Master wrote many, many years ago, and it is entitled The Unseen Church. On the soil of eternity, I built an unseen church where all might worship. Here under the blue dome, illumined by sun, moon, aurora, Milky Way, and wisdom light, are gathered the assembled star families, island universes, solar systems, and the little earth with its millions of families of many religions. Every day during the Vesper hour, the flying angels of thought soar over infinity, calling mute and noisy beings to forsake their age-long slumber and join the cosmic service of awakening. The altars of one rhythm, united hearts of commingled lives, of molten gold of cosmic union, and electrified matter were dimly burning with his gentle, enchanting presence. The comets arrived and shed their joyous tears of light. The stars poured their twinkles at his feet of eternity. And the prodigal soul shed tears of repentance for age-long forgetful wandering. All the blossoms of the earth opened the cork of petals and loosened their liquid fragrance on his omnipresent altar. The dew of devotion from the heart of all true tears meekly but steadily flowed over his feet of forgiveness. Love, hate, light and gloom, wisdom and ignorance, good and bad, all thronged into the church of all creation. Then the silent sermon of the infinite was heard in the silence. A silent song of mirth filled the chalice of all lives. A silent smile of light drove the hidden gloom away from all. Under the silent spell of his sermon, love embraced hate, light hugged gloom, wisdom transmuted ignorance, good charmed bad. Many religions embraced his one faith of truth. Many hearts dissolved into one altar of heart. Many loves became his one pure love. And many souls became one spirit. And all of them sang with one voice, the chorus of one religion, one life, one truth, one goal, one devotion, one love, and one spirit. I think that's one of the most beautiful things I have ever read. What a poet he was, and how great was his love for God. He placed his love for God before anything or anybody in the world. He served him tirelessly. He served him day and night, no matter how many demands there were on his time, how tired he was. Still he served. And one time he told me that he had been 16 days without sleep. 16 days when he had not closed his eyes. And yet, he was fully in the consciousness of God. Because when you put yourself ahead of God, you are always tired. You always have excuses. But when you put God, the Creator, ahead of the creature, He always gives you the strength to do whatever is necessary for you to do, without exception. I spend myself, or try to, in a small way, the same as he did, because I tried to emulate him in all that he did for God and for God and humanity. And many times I am desperately tired, and sometimes this physical body is not all that it should be. And still I make the effort to come before you and to serve God in you. And if I can make that effort to come, so also can you. And yet, strangely enough, when I make it, I stand before you and I feel the bliss of His presence. I feel that power. I feel His intelligence going through my thoughts. And my whole body is rejuvenated. My mind is rejuvenated. And I am a new person in Christ. I invite you all to have this experience. It is very, very important. Not for my sake, but for your sake, for God's sake, so that we can spread this truth across the earth, so that it is His name which may be on every tongue, His fame and His glory unfold, so that man may find his true being and the knowledge of his oneness with God. I've chosen as my subject this morning, how to be a master. And our reading is from St. Luke, chapter 6, beginning with verse 39. And he spake a parable unto them. Can the blind lead the blind? Shall they not both fall into the ditch? The disciple is not above his master, but every one that is perfect shall be as his master. And why beholdest thou the mote that is in thy brother's eye, but perceivest not the beam that is in thine own eye? Either how canst thou say to thy brother, Brother, let me pull out the mote that is in thine eye, when thou thyself beholdest not the beam that is in thine own eye? Thou hypocrite, cast out first the beam out of thine own eye, and then shalt thou see clearly to pull out the mote that is in thy brother's eye. For a good tree bringeth not forth corrupt fruit, neither doth a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit. For every tree is known by his own fruit. For of thorns men do not gather figs, nor of a bramble bush gather they grapes. A good man out of the good treasure of his heart bringeth forth that which is good, and an evil man out of the evil treasure of his heart bringeth forth that which is evil. For of the abundance of the heart his mouth speaketh. And why call ye me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say? Whosoever cometh to me and heareth my sayings and doeth them, I will show you to whom he is like. He is like a man which built an house and dig deep, and laid the foundation on a rock. And when the flood arose, the stream beat vehemently upon that house, and could not shake it, for it was founded upon a rock. But he that heareth and doeth not is like a man that without a foundation built an house upon the earth, against which the stream did beat vehemently, and immediately it fell, and the ruin of that house was very great. I would like to tell you a story this morning. I've told this once or twice through the years. But it's a beautiful, a wonderful, and a true story for every man who seeks his God realization. It is a story about a child who was born. And he was born with all of the great gifts that God usually gives to man. He was an unusual child. And at the age of four, he was a prodigy. He was very well versed in music, and he could paint, and it seems that he was interested in literature and the drama. And people watched his development through the years in great awe and wonder, wondering how God could have poured so many gifts into one individual being. When he became 21, he was acclaimed all over the earth for his mastership of these four arts. He was born with three great desires, and he had already fulfilled the first one. Art lovers from all over the world came to worship at his feet, but it was a strange thing about him. There was something inside of him that was very humble, that seemed to welcome criticism and shrink from praise. And so, having mastered the first of the great wishes that he had in his art, he took up the second one, and he became a material scientist. And he learned all of the things of science to the degree where he was given great titles after his name, all the chairs, all the names, all the titles. And people came from all over to acclaim him for his mastership in this way. But still the same thing held true of him. He still remained a humble man. And he still welcomed criticism. And he shied away from praise. And then he had another great wish. And that was to study philosophy. And he became a master in that field also. And he wrote a whole library filled with books. And these books were used in universities all over the world as having and containing the greatest of wisdom. But still, having attained all of this acclaim, with people thinking he was the greatest brain that had ever, he had the greatest brain that had ever existed, still, he was unsatisfied. He felt empty. And so the fourth and greatest wish was born, and that was that he wanted to become a master. So he left all of the things which he had accumulated in the world in the way of name, of fame, of wealth, and he journeyed to India so that he might find a master who would teach him how to become master of himself and to attain his realization of oneness with God. And he went all over India. He studied with various teachers. He took up various techniques. He studied different arts of yoga, of all of the various religions of India. And still, he did not feel that he was even at the beginning of becoming a master. So he became discouraged. And he went out into the world. And he decided he was going to give the whole thing up. And he started practicing evil vices. And one thing after another became a part of his nature, a part of his everyday life. And he became more and more degraded. He became more and more run down, more and more degenerate, until he was just a shell of what he had been at the greatness and the peak of his career. He had descended to such depths that finally he decided he was going to take his own life, because he had nothing more to live for. But all of a sudden, as he walked along, thinking that he would go to the river and end his life, he saw a very ancient-looking man sitting under a tree. And this man was talking to a lot of young people. So the derelict stood a ways away, and he watched as the master talked to these young people. And gradually he saw them get up one or two at a time and leave the presence of the man. And this kept happening and happening, and finally, as one young man asked him, he said, "Why is everybody leaving? Who is this man?" Well, the young man said to him, "He's supposed to be a great saint. But you know, he talks like a baby. He doesn't really know what he's talking about. He wants us to give up all the things that we love to do in life, like going out and having a good time, drinking, smoking, all of this sort of thing. He wants us to give this up. The man is absolutely mad." And finally, the last young person had left the presence of this man under the tree. And the derelict's heart was touched, and he went over to him, and he said to him, "Sir, I hear that you are a very wise man. Can you teach me to be a master?" And the man said, "Yes, my son, I can teach you to be a master." He said, "Why did all these young people leave your feet?" He said, "You are supposed to be a great saint," they tell me. "Why did they leave your feet?" He said, "Because they loved themselves more than they loved God. They were not willing to give up the things which were necessary to give up in order to get the eternal wealth of spirit." And he said, "Well, tell me," and hope was born in his heart at that moment, "tell me, how can I become a master?" And he said, "Do you really want to become a master?" "Oh, yes." He said, "Once I was very great in the world," he said. And he said, "Yet I was empty. I was hungry." He said, "I was dissatisfied. No matter what came to me, nothing seemed to fill my being." He said, "I was like a hole that is dug in the sand by the ocean shore." And he said, "Gradually the hole fills up. It never goes any place, and yet you always feel that there it is, empty, even as the sand pours into it." And so the man said, "All right." He said, "I will teach you how to become a master if you are willing to do this." And he said, "I want to tell you 12 words. They were love, truthfulness, honesty, patience, kindness, generosity, humility, courtesy, unselfishness, good temper, godlessness, and sincerity." He said, "These are all tremendous words, tremendous attributes of man." Now he said, "I would like you to take just one of those words. Tell me which one appeals to you more than any other word." And he said, "Well, I think out of all of those words you have given me, I would choose the word kindness, because in all of this time that I have gone downhill in the last couple of years, you are the first human being who has shown me any kindness." And he said, "That is a wonderful word to choose, my son." He said, "Because that word will help you to go to God in a more simple fashion than any other one that you could have chosen." He said, "How could just the word kindness take me to God? It is so simple." He said, "Well, sometimes the things that seem very simple are really the most difficult." Now, he said, "The word kindness, if practiced, will take you all the way to God. It is a simple word, it is true. But I will teach you how to use this word kindness to take you to that high estate which your heart craves and desires." And he said, "You must do what I ask of you, though." So the man promised that he would. So he said, "I will provide food for you, and I want you to go to some out-of-the-way place. And I want you to practice being kind to all of the animals of the forest, to all of the birds, the insects, to the trees, to the flowers, to all of nature. And I want you to do this for 12 times 12 days. And at the end of that time, I want you to come back to me and report to me of your experiences." So the man agreed to do this. And he took the food which was provided for him, and he went out into the forest. And he started practicing being kind to all of the animals, all of the beasts of the field, to every single bird and insect, to the trees, the flowers, and every growing thing in nature. And he became so kind to them that they all gathered around him. And he learned that everything in creation spoke one common language. And he got a new insight in life. And he thought how much he had missed by not having communed with God and nature in this way. So at the end of 12 times 12 days, he returned to the feet of the master, and he reported his progress. And the master was very pleased, but not surprised. And so he gave him his next refinement. He said, "Now, my son, you have gone away from the world. You have gone into the forest. You have practiced kindness to all of God's creatures and to all of the things of nature. Now I'm going to give you a more difficult assignment, and this is very difficult indeed. I want you to go out into the world and start practicing being kind to every single human being you see. No matter how much unkindness they show to you, no matter how much they revile you, they persecute you, they spit upon you, still you are to practice seeing God in them and being kind. Now he said you will have a very difficult time when you go out into the world again, having been alone with God and nature in the forest. And he said many of the things which tempted you before, which will come before you, and they will come with even greater power to tempt you from your goal, because now they see that the light is beginning to shine in you, and they will try to destroy that light. But no matter how much you are tempted, and no matter how much you fall, how many times, pay no attention to the number of times that you fall, nor to the temptation. Just remove your thoughts from whatever you have done that you do not feel is right in God. Remove your mind from the temptation and place it only upon the one word, kindness, and keep practicing being kind even to those who tempt you. So the man went forth, and for 12 times, 12 days, he lived in the world. And as he practiced being kind to everyone who came before him, as he practiced seeing God in everyone who came before him, gradually he again regained his self-respect. And people began to look up to him and to say nice things to him about him because of his ever-loving kindness to them. So at the end of that term, he had learned another great lesson, that the important thing was not that he had fallen occasionally in his effort to please the Master, not that he had been tempted, but that he had kept on in spite of everything else, of practicing kindness to every soul and to seeing God in that one. And he had made great strides, great progress. He could feel health and life and inspiration again flowing through his being. And again returned to the feet of the Master. And the Master told him that he was very well pleased after he reported to him. And he said, now it comes to the third and the most difficult feat of all. Your third assignment is to live life wherever you find it, in the forest, in the world, but every place you live your life, you are to practice being kind to yourself. Well, I thought everyone was kind to themselves. No. He said, no one hardly is kind to themselves, because they do all of the wrong things. They put the wrong food in their bodies. They keep the wrong thoughts in their minds. They do the wrong actions to other people for their own self-gain. They destroy themselves minute by minute, and they are terribly unkind to themselves while thinking they are kind to themselves. He said it is a strange thing. You are very discriminative about the things that you put on the table, the things that you are to take in your mouth. Everything must be clean. It must be well cooked. It must not be spoiled in any fashion, and it must provide only health for your body. You would not dream of serving garbage on your dinner table. And yet, you pick up a book which is filled with garbage. You get in a group of people who speak nothing but garbage, who offer you nothing but garbage, and you say you are kind to yourself. Oh no. You are being very, very unkind to yourself. If you will go out and practice this one thing of being kind to yourself every moment, of keeping your full attention upon God, of being kind to every living creature, every human being in the same way, but most of all to yourself, you will find that you will have attained all of these 12 virtues, every one of them, because your heart will be filled with love. You cannot be kind to a person and speak an untruth to them. You cannot be kind to yourself and speak that untruth, because whatever seeds you plant will surely return to you. You will become honest because it will be impossible for you to be dishonest with anyone else when you are first kind to yourself and therefore honest with yourself. You will certainly have learned the art of patience, because it takes a great deal of patience to have done what you have already done and to do what you still have to do, which is the most difficult of all. Because you must be patient with yourself above all other things. You must not become angry with yourself and get discouraged. You must cultivate patience. Kindness you are already practicing. When you are kind, do you not feel generous? And so you develop the gift of generosity. And when you see God in every form, and you are practicing kindness and asking nothing for yourself, have you not developed the virtue of humility? If you are being kind to everybody else, you have also the art of courtesy, and you must first be courteous to yourself. And in doing all of this, with but one purpose in mind, and that is to become master of yourself, and think only of God and to serve Him, have you not developed unselfishness? Through it all, because of all of these other virtues which you have developed, do you not have a good temper, which is also one of the virtues? Have you not developed guilelessness? Because you're so honest in everything that you do, with but your one purpose in mind, that there is no guile in you. And above all, you have developed sincerity. Now, he said, my son, if you will go out and for 12 times 12 days practice being kind to yourself, at the end of that time, I will come and sit at your feet, because a master is only a master if he knows that he can also drink of the full cup which the disciple holds in his or her hand. And so at the end of that time, I will come and you shall teach me all of the things of which you were master and still are. And then between the two of us, our cups shall be filled. So at the end of 12 times 12 days, the master of the East, the saint who gave the man wisdom and helped him to become a master, came and sat at the feet of the other master. And this is the way the East and the West met, in common communion and union with God, and with everything in all of creation. Now this is a wonderful, wonderful story. It's a sermon in itself. There is very, very little I could add to it. But something was sent to me, which I would like to share with you. And it has bearing on this same story. A letter appeared in the daily newspaper of a large city. It was written by a very unhappy woman. She complained that her husband thought it was funny to make her pet cat drunk by putting gin in his milk. The woman complained that the cat would stagger and dance around in circles, finally falling in the corner and sleeping. Besides all this, the cat was losing its hair because of the diet. Immediately from all over the country, people spoke out denouncing the husband and suggesting various ways and degrees of punishment for the man who would be so cruel to animals. Now this is ironical. Give an animal liquor and you're considered cruel. Give a man liquor and you're considered sophisticated. Let the animal get drunk, act foolish, and fall in a stupor, and immediately it is an occasion for people from coast to coast to howl in protest. Let a man do the same thing to a youthful girl or boy, and we ignore it. Let a man do the same thing to a grown man or woman or to himself, and we say that's his business. We shouldn't give liquor to a cat or any animal for that matter. It's inhuman. Yet men give it to their sons and daughters and business associates and friends. With all the advertising media at our command, we continually urge them to drink what is not fit for a cat or a dog. How crazy can some adults be? One other thought. Statistics show that 10,000 people are killed by liquor each year. More than 50% of the auto accidents are caused by liquor, while only one is killed by a mad dog annually. Yet we shoot the dog and license the liquor. strange human, wine is a mocker, and strong drink is raging, and whosoever is deceived thereby is not wise. That's from Proverbs 20, verse 1. Be not deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. From Galatians chapter 6, verses 7 and 8. I think that ties in very well with this idea of being kind to yourself. There are many people who have put their feet upon the path of God. And yet, we talk about the blind meeting the blind, as we said in this chapter this morning. Some people come to church regularly, religiously, every Sunday. Yet, they go out and they drink and they smoke and they have extracurricular sexual activity. They steal from their neighbors, they lie, they gossip, they do all of these things, and yet they say they want God's realization. You cannot serve God and mammon too. You cannot serve two masters. For either, as it says in the scriptures, you will love the one and hate the other, or you will reject the other and hold the other one to your bosom. Now you must learn to become master of yourself. When we call people masters, it isn't that we are thinking of ourselves as subservient, or it shouldn't be that way. When we refer to them as master, even my master, it is because that one has made the necessary effort to do everything that is required of them, to become masters of themselves, that they have learned to be kind on all of the levels of creation. And the greatest is to be kind to themselves. Because who gets the reward when you finally make the effort? Does the other fellow who sits around and offers you temptation, criticizes you, and finally throws you in the gutter because you're of no more use, he's tired of you, he's bored with you because you've become such a mess? It is you who reap the reward. And you can look at the man who offered you the temptation. And if you had the courage to refuse and to stand for what you knew was right and true in God, you can look at this man and see his destruction. But you, unlike him, will not become bored with him. Because don't forget that Jesus came to save sinners and not the self-righteous. And so that one who has made the full effort will reach down in the gutter and hold out his hand to the man who tried to destroy him and who has destroyed himself, and try to lift him up and clean him up and give him some of the light of God which has become so great within himself. This is true mastership. The one who has learned to master himself in all of the vicissitudes of life, all of the temptations, everything is going to keep on coming at us, even when we get our God realization. Because such a one is still living in a human body in the world of duality. And this is the way of life in its present state. And it is this way. All of this suffering, this torment, this violence and all, because man has not made the effort to change one thing, and that is himself. He must change himself first. He must build his house upon a rock, not upon the earth, or the earthly things which will fade away and rust and disintegrate. He must build a firm foundation. He must plant the good seed so that he will reap the good reward. Because there are three phases of man. He cannot think a thought unless there is a corresponding emotion. So the thought comes first in everything. For instance, if a daughter's mother died, she didn't think of the death of the mother first. The mother died, and then the daughter wept. So the first cause must come first, and then the resulting emotion. Now, how do we start to become masters of ourselves? We start to become masters of ourselves by watching our thought process. These thoughts will come, many of them tempting us. And they come through the senses, because our eyes, our ears, our nostrils, our mouth is always open. and our feelings, and we take in all of the things that we have to deal with on the outside through these five senses. And as we take them in, then the electrical current and the intelligence transmits them to the brain. And so the thoughts come. Now, many people dwell upon things secretly, but yet don't forget that what you think of in secret, even murder, you shout from the housetop. And the reason you do that is because God is within you. And no matter where you're going or what you do, He is there and He knows what you're doing because He is your real self. You cannot possibly escape it. You can't get away with a thing as far as God is concerned. That's how He happens to be omniscient, because He is omnipresent, everywhere equally present, and that means that He is inside of you. So, from the thought comes an emotion or a feeling, and from that emotion or feeling comes action. So if you can stop the whole thing and from the wrong direction, the evil, at the thought process, then you're going to have a much better chance of purifying yourself physically, mentally, and spiritually. Now, this doesn't mean that you should reject every thought that comes to you, because pretty soon you'll be a die in that sense, a nothing. It means that you should let the thoughts come, but you should watch them, and then the God self in you should choose which ones you want to keep and which ones you want not to keep. And so instead of making a big thing about the ones you don't want to keep, replace it with an opposite and positive thought. With an opposite and positive thought. Like, for instance, if a man is working in a bank and he sees all of this money around him all the time, and he has a tremendous desire to get some of this money for himself, and he starts to think, just he's not really going to do it, he tells himself, but he starts to think, I wonder how I could really get away with it. He starts planning a robbery. Every single little detail. Pretty soon the emotion takes hold, and he visualizes himself as being absolutely wealthy, never found out. Think of all the wonderful time he's going to have, all of this. And so finally that temptation becomes so strong that he's going to put it into action, but 99 times out of 100 he's going to get caught, he's going to spend years behind jail, he's ruined his reputation, he's ruined the reputation of his family, he's destroyed all the love, the kindness, the respect that he had from people, he's lost his job, and he's in a pretty sorry state. But if this same man, when this idea had come, had looked at him and had immediately replaced that thought with ways of thinking how he could do a better job for the bank, how he could perfect his own work, how he could create new ideas that would make the banking system more efficient, then he would benefit by it, because the people for whom he worked would notice his endeavors, his creativeness, and they would reward him. One day he might even become president of the bank. One day he might even have more than all of the money that was deposited in that bank. And this is one good example how you can take that which was evil, that thought that came to you, and replace it with something that will be constructive and good. But do not fight the evil. Don't give it power that way. No matter what you have done, how many times you have fallen, just practice kindness to yourself. Keep your mind on God. This is the greatest thing that anybody can do for themselves at any time. Serve only one master. You cannot serve yourself and serve God at the same time. Because that self which you serve is a false self. It is the ghost of the real self or God within you. It is the human ego which you serve. The Son of Man. It is not the Son of God, the Christ, the Savior who is within you. And until you can come to that point where you are willing to put God first in everything, no matter what your friends, your relatives, your husband, your wife, your children think or say to you, that you give everything you have in the way of effort, of service, of your possessions to God. And if you will do that, no matter how much static you get, God will protect you and eventually you will come out on top. Because through the experience of opposition which is given to you, you will have but one place to go, and that is to God. And so therefore it provides the opportunity for growth. The trouble is we try to shy away from unpleasantness. We try to keep to our bosom, hug to our bosom, all of the things that we like to do, that we like to take into our bodies, and that we like to express from ourselves. We keep these because we don't want to give them up. But yet we say we love and we worship God. This is dishonest. We are speaking out of both sides of our mouth, and we will never reach our goal. And the day will come, as it says in the scriptures, that those who follow the path of the human ego will find death, but those who follow the path of God will find eternal life. Who on earth would choose one over the other, the lower one over the higher? What fools we mortals be. It's just as this little thing which came out of a church pamphlet back east, incidentally, that we will shoot the dog because he's mad. And yet we will do what we do to human beings, and ourselves in particular. I'll tell you something, and I know it as sure as I'm standing here, because it has been revealed to me, it has been verified by some of the greatest saints on earth, that this truth, which I am giving you from the depths of my own experience, and which is being spread in tremendous ways. I'm getting more free advertising than I ever dreamed of. It's going so many places. It's going to spread all over the earth one day. And this earth is going to be changed. It has to be changed. Because until man will change himself, the world will never change. And certainly there isn't a person that is living in this world today who thinks it's the greatest place on earth. This earth was given to man to be a paradise wherein he might live in love and service and brotherhood. Love for all men everywhere, God in all men. And eventually the time will come, I tell you now, that we can't always love what the individual does, but we can always love God in that individual. And this is true. But the day will come when we can love the individual too, because there'll be nothing but God in that one. Nothing but God. And this is the day that we are looking forward to. This is the good news that will spread across the earth. But it isn't going to spread anyplace unless each and every one of us does our part, until each and every one of us becomes masters of ourselves. And we can do it. We can do it. Because the power of God is the only power in this earth, and it is that power which is within us. And if we will only take hold of it and use it constructively, and always build the firm foundation, always plant the good seed, God's reward will surely come, and we will find ourselves filled with life and love and power and wisdom and happiness and delight. These are the promises that have been given to us, and the reason that we have not been able to get them is because we haven't done our part. It's as simple as that. This type of thing is spreading all over. I don't have a monopoly. Believe me, I was told by a doctor the other day that he attended a convention, a medical convention, and he met a man who was not only a great doctor in the medical class, but he was a great spiritual man. And he was teaching these men about the light, the third eye. And he said, now one thing you can do for the patients that come, have them visualize this light in the center of the forehead. Have them visualize it as extending all through the brain. It is the most powerful light in the world. It is the light of God. He said, then visualize that, have them visualize that light extending all down through their bodies. And think of it as a bright, shining fire that is burning away all the disease, all that is not good. Imagine that from a medical man instructing a bunch of medical men. This is tremendous, but it is true. And many healings have taken place from doing just exactly that. Of seeing not only the other self, but yourself filled with this light of Christ. see it permeate every part of your body. Concentrate on the part that is in trouble and send that light, that energy, that fire there, and watch it in your mind's eye. Destroy everything that is not as it should be, perfect in God. If you will only have the faith, God is with you. You are His child, His beloved child. And it is His will that you have all of the good things of His kingdom. This is abundant health, great intelligence, the power to do His work, perfect health, everything, abundance in every field. There is only one thing, be kind to yourself, and you will find that indeed you will become a master. No disciple can become greater than the master, but the disciple can become as the master, which places him in the category of also being a master, heir with Christ in God.